"Caviar," Dr. LeFranc said at last, and she stopped before double doors that were gray. She passed a magnetic card across a card reader, and the door swung open. "This is the sound frequency distribution research area," she said. "We have been trying to correlate sound wave penetration with material resistances." "Determining coefficients?" Liz asked. Dr. LeFranc ducked her eyes for a moment. "Precisely. What a remarkable acumen," and her voice was soft, but Boyd glanced at Liz again. Their hostess was annoyed with Liz's perceptiveness. She frowned. "I thought this type of research had been discarded a few years ago." "Only officially," LeFranc said. "The research continues."
"Do you ever test sound waves outside this area?" Boyd asked.
"Once or twice at NASA, but that went unreported. She let them wander around the research area, which was a square room equipped with covered, soundproofed hoods in the corners. A long, gleaming computer ran along one wall, and there were a few workbenches set up, cluttered with slide rules and papers. Most of the research, Liz realized, was calculations, and the hoods were probably used to fine-tune frequency-generating circuits for prototypes. "If you're ready," Dr. LeFranc asked, and Liz and Corporal Boyd both nodded. They were led to more labs. Laser research predominated, but that was to be expected, for the sudden explosion of transistor technology had opened the door to solid-state weaponry, and lasers were the first and most accessible possibility for solid-state. But there were small research groups still tracking biological weapons, not so much for offense, but presenting means for a good defense if the Russians should violate the Geneva Convention. Another research group fascinated Boyd, for they specialized in the analysis of household and industrial products that could be quickly converted to explosives or gas bombs. It was a long afternoon with no break for tea, but at last, at 5:30, LeFranc led them back to conference room 314-3C. "You'll have supper with us, of course," she said in her pleasant voice and fake accent, but it was not a request. "And then there will be the television press conference. It will be broadcast locally and in London per your brigadier's orders. It shouldn't last longer than 5 or 10 minutes. He doesn't want it to appear too important." "No, of course not," Liz said. Dr. LeFranc now let her boredom show as she glanced quite openly at her wristwatch. "Well, it has been a long day indeed, and I must validate the daily reports, even though I have nothing of substance to contribute. I have the list of samples you requested, and Dr. Shapansky will see to their proper sealing and packaging. Dinner is at 7. Dr. Shapansky will come and get you. I'll see you then," and she exited. Boyd folded his arms and leaned against one of the cushioned chairs.
"Well, I like that. What are we supposed to do for an hour and a half?"
"Be uncomfortable and feel out of place, I assume," Liz told him.
"We could go down to that meat locker," he said, "and take a second look at those hog carcasses."
"You may not realize this, Corporal, but we're not in the same conference room we were when we first met Dr. LeFranc." Startled, he straightened up and looked around. The arrangement was identical, but Liz's swift and analytical gaze had picked out the subtle differences of one too many chairs in the room and a telephone connector pulled out from the wall. She looked at the upholstery on the cushions of the straight-back chairs. "It's a different pattern, too," she said. He hurried past her and went out into the hallway. He looked up and down the carpeted hall.
"The plants are wrong," he said. "Wrong type."
"An experienced eye would know the difference, but I'm sure the majority of visitors would never notice. We cannot retrace our steps to the meat locker because we do not know where we are." He looked at her with an expression of concern.
"What do you make of this, Professor Shaw?"
"We still have to get lodging for the night," she said.
"There's a telephone in there." He nodded to the conference room's interior. "I'll see to things, but it won't be convenient. It'll take a while."
"Yes, all right." She sighed and shot a rueful glance down the hallway. When the doctor next met with Lethbridge Stewart in the Briggs office, the Time Lord was more serious about the entire situation.
"I think the first pathology reports were cursory," he said, "and I think the pathologist's review had to find something explicable. Hence, the electrocution theory. There was charring. The bodies were found just outside the electrified fence at TSRG, and acute cause of death could be ascribed to heart failure, which is the typical cause of death in electrocution."
"You're saying it was an electrocution?" the brigadier asked. "Then what was it?"
"Well, that's the difficulty." He rubbed the back of his neck. "The bodies have been buried, some for several weeks. If we dig them up, you'll have another riot on your hands. Those villagers will be back, and there's no guarantee that we'll be able to make a clear diagnosis from decomposed bodies."
What killed them? Get to the point, man.
I'm not sure. I'm still looking at existing samples under a microscope. Incredible damage to human tissue.
I would assume as much from electrocution.
Not that kind of damage. I mean an alteration of the biology of the human tissue. Human tissue that could no longer sustain human life, as though they'd been shot full of cancer or shot full of genetic mutations.
What about radiation?
But the charring makes no sense, and the doctor began to pace. He seemed to be talking to himself.
Doctor, I'm sure that radiation can cause charring, and it mutates human cells.
What's that? Who said anything about radiation? And the doctor stared at him, puzzled and annoyed. They certainly didn't die of radiation. What utter nonsense. Then, quite suddenly, he snapped his fingers. Radiation, of course.
Look, could you please tell me what you're talking about? The brigadier asked.
A radiation signature. Radiation didn't kill them, but there may be residual radiation on the bodies. Nothing harmful, just a leftover from whatever powered the blast that killed them. I can get a reading to tell me one way or another.
So we will have to exhume the bodies, and the brigadier looked at him.
But, oh no, the tissue samples taken by the pathologist might be enough. I've got to go see to it. Thank you, brigadier. You were very helpful, for once, and the doctor hurried out. Over the telephone in the conference room, Boyd at last was able to negotiate rooms for them at a pub in the closest town. He cradled the telephone receiver with a sigh of relief. "We drove past the outer edge of the community on our way in," he told her. "Used to be just another village with a green, but with the population increase from TSRG, it's grown a bit beyond that. But it's still got the look and feel of a quaint little place."
"Telephones and televisions?" she asked.
He lifted both eyebrows.
"Even indoor plumbing. What a treat."
By now they were both sitting in the deserted room. They had 45 minutes to go until dinner.
"How does such a pretty woman come across as so homely?"
he asked all of a sudden.
"Do you mean Dr. LeFranc?"
"No, Schepansky." He cocked his head. "Milk-white skin, flowing red hair, eyes like ebony. Yet she's homely as a hamster."
"Corporal!"
Her eyes flashed at him.
"Just being candid with my only ally for 100 miles or so."
He waited to see if her indignation would abate. As it seemed to, he added,
"It's pretty obvious that you don't think much of her, and she's very jealous of you. What's your history? How'd she end up here?"
"I have no idea how she got here, Corporal.
Why don't you tell me what you really think?"
Liz bristled slightly.
"Because I have no wish to be petty."
"I'm not asking based on pettiness," he said. "Look, LeFranc treats Schepansky like a hired hand, not like an accredited scientist. How do you rate Schepansky?"
Liz searched for words and then said,
"She was not a promising candidate in graduate school."
"Do you think she truly is a qualified research scientist?"
Now his eyes were dark and intense.
"As for the degree, it can be done, even by those who lack the qualifications. I'm sorry to say that all the usual loopholes and shortcuts can still be used. Money, charm."
"Yes, all levels of charm," he added quickly.
"Quite." The idea that women had entered the field of science by sleeping their way 2 degrees had been raised by a few protesters to Liz's own swift rise to prominence in her field. But she had never even taken such hints seriously enough to be angered by them. She was brilliant, and she knew she was brilliant.
"But how did she get on at TSRG?" he asked.
He threw a speculative glance at the door.
"You don't suppose that she and Le—"
"Corporal, that's enough. This is not furthering your investigation."
"I apologize," he said instantly. "You're right. What remains, apart from all speculation, is that Dr. Schepansky behaves as a person with no expectations of being treated as a senior scientist, and Dr. LeFranc does not treat her as one, even though Dr. Schepansky has the title of senior scientist."
"Does that really matter?" Liz asked.
"Everything matters when 4 people are dead and you and I are being led around in a maze, Professor Shaw," he told her.
"I don't see how commenting on the beauty or homeliness of a scientist furthers the investigation."
"Because she should be beautiful, but that mask. Her face is a mask," he said, "a really tense mask."
"Certainly, if she's incompetent, she has every reason to be tense." But Liz heeded the import of his words and realized that the laconic Boyd was quite observant and highly analytical.
Dr. Schepansky was not what she pretended to be, and yet Dr. LeFranc knew this and had raised no objections. She openly used Dr. Schepansky as a mere technician and personal assistant. "The brig expects you to say it's all right," he reminded her. "I can hardly raise a public objection on the grounds that Dr. Schepansky ought to be both qualified and attractive, and is neither."
"If you say it's all right, we lose a leg to stand on."
"He promised an investigation regardless."
"Which TSRG will hinder and delay?"
Boyd's face and voice were bland, but his eyes intent. She let out her breath. "Corporal, we really must get public focus off of unit."
"Certainly. Let's refocus it on TSRG.
She shook her head. "I have my orders." Just then, the ungracious Dr. Schepansky entered without knocking. She fixed her two dark eyes on Liz and spoke as though Boyd did not exist.
"We have 30 minutes until dinner. You'll want to freshen up and meet the others."
This was not a request, nor was it stated with a cordial tone.
"Lead on, Commander," Boyd said as they stood.
Liz flashed him a look, not cross, but warning him to take a light hand. At Unit HQ, the Brigadier was just sitting down to a belated cup of tea in his office when Corporal Bell entered, her broad face perplexed and troubled. She so rarely came without being called that the Brigadier gave her his full attention at once.
"Yes, Corporal, is something wrong?"
"The files, sir," she told him. "When I was allowed back into the file room after the intruders were cleared out, I suspected that the security of the room had been breached."
"Something missing?"
"The personnel file folder for Professor Shaw was misfiled in the wrong place in the drawer." She held up the file folder and let it open so that the front cover dangled down.
"Empty, sir. All of her information is missing."
He stood up, tea forgotten.
"Stop the security breach and threat procedure. Disable all her clearances at once and rekey the locks for all areas accessible to her."
He plucked up the telephone and spoke into the receiver.
"Get me in contact with Corporal Boyd."
Then he glanced at Corporal Bell.
"I want a detail sent to her residence at once. They ought to occupy and guard her flat. Send somebody from Ordnance out there first to do a thorough check."
"Right away, sir," and she hurried out just as the doctor strode in. "What's wrong now?" the doctor asked.
"Miss Shaw's personnel file has been stolen. That entire riot this morning was a diversion. They stormed the gates to get us focused on the doors and sensitive areas. They've picked her out, and now they've got detailed information on her."
The doctor crinkled his brow. "Then you've got an inside person here at Unit helping them. Someone who knew just where to go."
"Yes, thank you, Doctor. I am so glad that you can tell me what I already know. Perhaps now you've done that, you'll tell me what I don't know."
He came around his desk and took up his hat. "You're going after her."
"I am indeed. She knows too much, and this situation has not yet been resolved to my satisfaction. If there's some type of determined attempt to harm her or kidnap her, Boyd will not be adequate to protect her. You'll stay here and check those radiation traces."
"Yes, of course."
"Right then, I'll see you later."
And he strode out. The doctor noticed the cup of tea untouched on the desktop. "Oh, how very thoughtful." He glanced at the clock and then took up the tea. Dinner in the dining hall of the research facility was not bad at all. In fact, it was much nicer than anything the unit ancillary services could have provided. The dining hall itself was furnished with several long tables beautifully laid out with china and crystal. The other members dressed in ties and coats for the meal, and Liz's more casual attire stood out, as did Boyd's uniform. But Liz had learned long ago that she was attractive enough to be welcomed by her colleagues if she became charming, so she felt much less self-conscious than perhaps LeFranc had intended. LeFranc herself ate with her own colleagues a few tables away. Dr. Schepansky was assigned to hostess the two visitors. At this task, Schepansky was a washout. She made introductions all around to those alongside Professor Shaw and Corporal Boyd, and then she kept her mouth closed. But she had her morose eyes fixed on Liz for most of the meal. The food itself, beef and not pork, and mountains of potatoes as well as individual puddings, invited all sorts of excess. But Liz held back, as did her associate. They still had work to do, and it could turn into a very long night. It was better not to overeat. But the coffee afterward, velvety black and wonderfully bitter with only slight acidity, consoled her. Liz loved good coffee, and she seldom got it. She enjoyed two cups while she and the scientists at the table discussed square wave formation and the possibilities for rectifying signals. Boyd might have been bored, but she realized that he was smiling most of the time. He behaved as though it was all very interesting, though he said little. Dr. Schepansky said nothing at all. Finally, Dr. LeFranc stood and crossed to them. "It's nearly time for the press conference," she said in her fake accent. "All right, then. Are you ready, Corporal?" Liz asked. "Oh, yeah." She stood and thanked everybody for their conversation. Then she and Boyd followed the TSRG scientist out. A windowed reception area that looked out over the car park had been strung with lights for the television cameras. A long table draped with brown cloth had been set up to accommodate the people who would speak. Boyd declined makeup when one of the crew approached him. "I'm just here to watch," he told her. Liz accepted a dusting of powder and then took her place in the center of the table, with LeFranc on one side of her and a man, the head of the TSRG site, on her other side. The glare of the lights was bright, and she didn't know where to look until Dr. LeFranc pointed to the sound man. "Just keep your eyes on him," she directed. Liz nodded. Dr. LeFranc had said the report should be only 5 to 10 minutes. Yet after the head of TSRG said a few words, it was LeFranc herself who belabored the reasons for the press conference. She also carried out a minute assessment of Liz's own credentials as a Cambridge scientist. And while the assessment seemed positive, it included a lot of phrases like, "Even so, Professor Shaw is more of a university researcher while we do real work in the field," and "The physics with which the professor is so well acquainted is, of course, classroom physics and not the specialized field of defense weaponry physics," so that it actually questioned the rationale for sending Liz Shaw out in the first place. During this long introduction, Liz was able to focus her eyes better in the glare, and she looked around. Boyd, she realized, was gone. She kept her face impassive and tried not to let her gaze be too obvious as LeFranc kept talking, but as she surveyed the room, she realized that he was definitely gone. There was a sudden silence, and she realized that the floor had now been given to her. Liz quickly gathered her thoughts and spoke into the microphone before her. "It is fair to say that an afternoon tour of a facility as large as TSRG can hardly do credit to the amazing array of research projects being conducted here. I am truly honored to have been selected for this inspection. While I can say that the projects that I have seen here are being carried out in compliance with international law and are in the best interests of the free world, I must also report that many of my questions remain unanswered." The gasp from LeFranc was audible and undisguised. Both cameras focused in on Liz as everybody realized that she had stunned her hosts. Liz continued her statement. "I must advise my countrymen that I am in sympathy with them in their concern over this research establishment, and I call for a wider and more in-depth investigation of this research facility by British authorities. Thank you." The television lights suddenly clicked off at a signal from the sound man. Black-clad TSRG security men immediately stepped forward from the two adjacent hallways and began to urge the television crews to hurry and leave. There would be no questions allowed, Liz thought. LeFranc turned to her, the huge dark eyes in the moon face livid with hostility. "How dare you! We were promised that you would express support for us!" Liz stood up and saw, to her relief, that Boyd had returned in time to hear the last bit of her report. She spoke to Dr. LeFranc. "I never promised you any such thing," she said. "I am not satisfied." She looked up. "Corporal, escort me out, will you? Before our TSRG friends see to it themselves." "Stop where you are," Dr. LeFranc exclaimed, and Liz saw, to her concern, that the black-clad security men rushed over at LeFranc's tone of voice and took up positions at either side of the table. The sound man had been hurriedly disconnecting microphones and packing them into a foam-lined case. He set this down on the tabletop and quickly clipped the lead back onto the one remaining microphone on the table. Corporal Boyd said nothing but stepped up to the table. "Do you think we don't know that you and this corporal took an unauthorized visit into that food locker?" LeFranc asked her. "Yes, and we found hog carcasses," Liz said. "You disregarded your orders and proper protocol and invaded a sterile area." "A meat locker?" she asked. One of the cameramen settled his camera back onto his shoulder. LeFranc realized that she was caught. She took in her breath and then abruptly turned. "This meeting is over. You will clear this site." As she turned, she swept the microphone case off the table. The case fell onto Liz's foot, and she tried to leap back. She fell against the table. Corporal Boyd pushed aside the security men and helped her. "No, it's all right," she said. "I won't give her the satisfaction of seeing me hurt," and she straightened up. Boyd was smiling, but his eyes had a look in them that worried Liz. Something was wrong. Nevertheless, he guided her through the throng of television crew in an effort to keep her away from the TSRG personnel. They found themselves in the coat room where they had first entered, and he quickly helped her into the army parka. He already had his driving gloves on, and he quickly slipped into his jacket. "Quick," he said to her, and he ushered her out to the car. At last they had a minute to speak unobserved. The night was dark and the wind high. Most of the security men were following after the television crew, who had parked their vehicles further up the narrow entrance road. "What's wrong?" she asked him. "I'm in a bit of pain," he told her. "It's not bad. I don't want to panic you, all right?" "All right, but you needn't worry that I'll panic," and she made her voice cold. She was surprised that he would even think such a thing. "I backtracked to the dining hall and followed Dr. Shapansky. She went into a lab area we haven't seen. More like an electronics workshop than a lab. Oscilloscopes and what looked like geology equipment, too, for measuring density. And Dr. Shapansky went into a supply area, and while she was in there, I knew I had to get back to you. So I opened up this thing that looked like an incubator, but there were metal discs inside it, about half a dozen, so I nicked one." "Corporal!" They had reached the car. He opened the back door for her, and then, before she slid inside, he pulled off his left glove. A metal disc, slightly raised in the center, sat on his palm, but even in the uneven light caused by the floodlights outside the buildings, Liz could see that vein-like wires from the disc had burrowed into his hand. "It's still growing. It's taking root in my hand," he said.